So you've heard it before, but Jesus says it again, you cannot serve God and wealth. And I believe that is as true as gravity, but most of us don't take his word for it until the God of wealth has failed us many times. Money has such a powerful grip on our lives. And why is that? Why is that? I want to say that one way to describe that is because deep in our soul, there is a program, if I can use that image, a program running within us that determines how we see money and life. And it's called the scarcity program. It's a deep, I mean profoundly deep, inner belief that we are always living on the edge of calamity. That it's just right over here, and if we're not careful, we're going to fall over into it. And in spite of the fact that I imagine most of our refrigerators are full of food and our houses are full of stuff, we're deeply anxious about not having enough. And that program of scarcity just keeps convincing us that that is the case. We're just so anxious our money's going to run out or disappear. You'd think we were nomads living in the Sahara Desert instead of upper middle class Americans living in the most fruitful place on earth. And the fact that most of us have a lot doesn't bother the scarcity program at all. As you will attest, we had the program was running when we, you know, were 15 and had very little, and it keeps running on and on, even though our wealth may increase. And it helps us, it tells us what we will see. I mean, it'll allow us to notice, you know, I've noticed a lot lately, one-legged Iraqi war veterans, you know, with their cup at the down ramp of certain roads looking for a handout. The program has no trouble with me seeing that person, but it kicks in when I pull up close because it whispers in my ear, you know, you might need that spare change. You're going into Cambridge. You're going to need to park. You can't give it away. And after all, he might use it for drink, which is ironic since many of us use our money for drink. But the scarcity program isn't going to allow us to see that either. And it has more to do with possessions and wealth. I mean, I experience it. Confession time here. I experience it especially around the scarcity of time. I was raised by my father mainly in this regard, God love him, to be in a hurry. Were any of you raised to just be in a hurry? To rush from one thing to the other as if my very life depended on it. The scarcity program is telling me this present moment isn't enough to live on, and I've got to hurry on to the next moment, into the future where finally I can sit down and rest and all will be well. And of course it's a lie, because you never get there. You've noticed that you never get to the future. All you get when the future comes is it's now again, and now is never enough, so you've got to run ahead, and you're always chasing life. But one day, oh yeah, one day you're going to get it. And the scarcity program just keeps us constantly on edge, so we end up closing down our hearts to life. And thus we will find, when we close down to life, it will appear to us that life has closed down to us. So in the gospel today, Jesus calls the scarcity program, he calls it wealth. Or like the King James, many of you raised on that version, well, mammon. I never knew what that was, but it's got a lot more gravitas than wealth. But mammon is money and wealth and possessions and all those things in the world we grab onto instead of grabbing onto God. And Jesus says you're perfectly free to live your life running that program, but if you do, you will miss your life. And therefore, Jesus is inviting us to drop it, instead to run what can be called the abundance program, which I think is actually given to us at our baptism. It's given to us. It's there at all times if we will just trust it and look for it. And it allows us to see the world as it really is, which is overflowing with life and love and abundance. It focuses us not on what we don't have, but on the overwhelming glory of what we do have, whether we're rich or poor. Yesterday, a number of us took a bus trip from here up to the Marsh Billings Rockefeller National Park in Woodstock, Vermont. And I highly commend that to you. It was a wonderful trip. And this is the only national park that focuses on conservation and the stewardship of the land. Well, I noticed my scarcity program kicked in really early because we watched the video that they produced, so you know who Marsh and Billings and Rockefeller are and why it's called that. And I realized in this that George Marsh and Frederick Billings and Lawrence Rockefeller were all fabulously wealthy titans of their age. And my little scarcity program kicked in and said, yeah, poor me. Poor me. It just felt this weight on me, you know, around all that wealth and all those guys that had earned it, of course, and poor me. But then, by the grace of God, the abundance program, which I said is always there, kicks in. It comes from the mind of Christ. And it says, well, why don't you just experience what's happening around you now? And you notice all of a sudden the wind is blowing through the trees. If you were outside yesterday, you notice it was a spectacular day, at least it was in Vermont, a glorious day. I was surrounded by this beautiful setting, felt life flowing through my body, and, you know, the wonderful park rangers and the great people that went on the trip with us. It was all abundance. But I can't see it if I'm looking at it through the scarcity program. So opening our heart to life from this perspective transforms everything. Everything. And we find great joy in being part of the abundance of God and letting that abundance flow through us out into the world rather than grasping it and trying to keep it inside as if we could. Reminds me when I was a young teenager and I was still able to trick-or-treat in Atlanta. You know, come back with that enormous bag filled with, I don't know, 5-8 pounds of candy. And the anxiety when my older brother, who was too old to go trick-or-treating, asked, can I have a Snickers? You know, that scarcity program, I might have given it to him. My parents might have shamed me into it. But I didn't like it. Because, you know, that might be it. It might all just vanish at any moment. But when the abundance program is running, you say, sure, take it. And you get more joy out of giving it than you get out of keeping it. And we get to choose moment by moment which program is running. They're both there. They will both always be within us. And so we practice, our prayer life is practicing being aware of what program is running at what time. And when you feel that anxiety coming and you're closing down, you can take a breath and breathe in the breath of Christ, the mind of Christ, and let go. In Jesus' parable, which I will admit is a confusing parable to say the least, the dishonest manager uses money to begin with to make more money, which we think in our culture is a good thing to do, use money to make more money. But when he loses his job, he decides to use what money he has to make more friends, to build relationships, to build more life. And really, what do we want? Do we want more stuff or do we want more life? I think about some of you know we're supposed, Stephanie and I are supposed to close on our house tomorrow and move later in the week to Boxford. I wish I could start a fire on all my stuff. I won't share that with you, but think about the obituary. Some of you have done this exercise of writing your own obituary. Very illuminating. You know, will it say, old Joe amassed some wealth, but died a bitter old man because he complained throughout his life about what he didn't have? Or will it say, old Jane never had much, but she poured out her life for others and died a peaceful and grateful woman? You can't serve both God and wealth. And it makes me think of Alfred Nobel. This is something I didn't know about him. You know, he was a chemist in Sweden in the 19th century, made a fortune inventing weapons of mass destruction like dynamite and working with nitroglycerin. But in 1888, as he opened the newspaper in France, he was in France, and he read an obituary that said that he had died. Actually, it was his brother Ludwig had died, but the French paper got it wrong. So he's reading his own obituary, and the title of it was "The Merchant of Death is Dead." And then there was this line in it: "Dr. Alfred Nobel, who became rich by finding ways to kill more people faster than ever before, died yesterday." Well, you might suspect this had an effect on Alfred Nobel. But he might have just, you know, had another cup of coffee and gotten over that effect. But what he did a couple years later was to change his will and give 94% of his wealth to fund and found the Nobel Prizes in chemistry, among others, and of course, the prize for peace. I think Jesus' words given to the dishonest manager applies to Alfred Nobel. He said, "And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes." By the way, some of you may be working on your will or getting ready to have a will or change your will. A way you can imitate him is to make a gift to All Saints Church and the ministry. Ultimately, you know, it comes down to our view of God, the nature of God. I mean, do we see God as a stingy, crotchety old man who's just hard to please? Or do we see God as a lavish giver of life and love, who just pours out abundance in creation moment by moment, from cradle to grave, whether rich or poor? That there is that abundance. And we open our hearts to that and become part of that and share in that, which is why we were created, and share in that life and peace. And this is what Jesus models for us. He is the action of God's abundance in the world. And his life, his death, and his resurrection give us the power to replace that scarcity program with the mind of Christ, the ability to see the abundance that's right there in front of us. And so 1 Timothy, you want to know that view of God? He says, "God, our Savior, desires everyone to be saved. Not a few, not those who do it perfectly, not those who are rich, not just those who are poor, but everyone to be saved and come to the knowledge of truth." And I'm pretty sure everyone includes you and me. Are we willing to believe in this kind of God? And of course we are. That's why we're here, to celebrate God's abundance and to be that abundance in the world. It's a matter of faith. But when we take that step, our life is transformed. So is Jesus saying, be foolish with your money? No, I think he's saying, be foolish with your love. Amen.